Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Well, that works, even though that's not our music. But okay. Welcome to the K Thompson. You're supposed to be here with Pancho Sanchez. Welcome to the K Thompson Live Show. My name is Eric Payne.
And I am K Thompson Payne. How are you?
K Thompson Payne? Okay. That's what you're working with today. We'll go with that. And we also have our new addition to the program, Mr. Wayne Gilman. He will be here shortly. Or calling in there.
On his way.
About.
On his way.
Today's February 26th.
Yeah.
2014.
Yeah.
And,
you know, we had a... there's loads of things that happened.
Within the past week, what?
Yeah. Well, I attended a jazz concert.
You attended a jazz concert?
At William Patterson College in, you know, Wayne, New Jersey. And with... the dean of the Arts and Visualization Department, I think that's it, Professor Daryl Moore. And guess who was there? It was the Latin Jazz and the students' Latin Jazz class, because they specialize in, you know, this rock and roll they're noted for, the music department. And they had Chico Mendoza. Wow.
Okay.
When the last time I saw him, I don't even remember the last time, but they were really absolutely fantastic music. And, you know, we really are generally open our show with Pancho Sanchez. So, but this is great too. So, but we'll have to locate
that.
Yeah,
that works
again.
As well.
Yeah, sure it does. Sure
they
it does.
In the booth over there. So yesterday was the 50th anniversary of Muhammad Ali's, at least it's the same album. Of Muhammad Ali's victory of becoming heavyweight champion of the world over Sonny Liston as the 50th anniversary of Muhammad Ali becoming, at that time, I think he was the youngest. No, I think Rocky Marciano was the youngest heavyweight champion. But, but it was the 50th anniversary yesterday, February 25th, of Muhammad Ali's becoming heavyweight champion
really?
Of the world.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of that day.
Yeah.
When young Cassius Clay beat the formidable Sonny Liston. And I talk about Muhammad Ali because he is one of my heroes.
I know. You went to his camp one
went
time.
Went to Deer Lake camp to visit Muhammad Ali before he fought Leon Spinks, because one of his bodyguards was a student of my late Uncle Donald, former Congressman Payne. And so his bodyguard arranged for us to come down there when my uncle was trying to run for Congress and challenge the late Peter Rodino. And arranged for us to go down there and meet with the champ. And unfortunately, he didn't. He was going to support us, but then he was kind of persuaded out of it. So he didn't. But it was really great meeting the greatest of all time.
Yeah, you were thrilled. You were in seventh heaven.
The whole thing about Muhammad Ali, what I remember is I first became aware of him around right after we moved to Maplewood, living in Maplewood in 1970, I'd say. I was in about fifth grade. It was when Muhammad Ali was going to fight Joe Frazier. And that was when he had gotten out of jail, and the whole push, what led up to that was the push for him to have his boxing license, you remember his boxing license, reinstated. And you know, he had been fighting people and stuff like that, and so eventually the opportunity came for him to regain his title and fight Joe Frazier, which unfortunately lost. But that was when I really became my awareness of Muhammad Ali. And watching you and Dad, you know, talk about him and the whole issue of him being stripped of his title because of his beliefs.
Yeah.
So I was originally a Joe Frazier fan because I thought this guy was a braggart and nobody likes anybody who brags and boasts all the time and talks a lot of trash. And I was a Joe Frazier dude. And I could remember some of the young guys in my little grade school. You know, some people were Frazier, some people were Clay. He was Ali Clay at the time. And I remember these guys walking
Cassius
around
Clay. Cassius
in,
Clay.
In arms locked talking about Clay. We're like, Clay. So that was my first awareness of Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And I was a Joe Frazier fan. But as time went on and I saw, I became aware of myself as a who I was and my blackness and stuff like that, I realized that Muhammad Ali represented me because he became my favorite because whatever he said he was going to do, if he said he was going to knock somebody out back in those days,
he knocked him out.
If you know, like I know, if there's anybody out there that's around my age listening, back in those days, you know, when Muhammad Ali, after he beat Joe Frazier and got his title, he was on a string for saying, and even before that, when he said he was going to knock somebody out in the third round,
I am the greatest.
Your ass was getting knocked out.
So, no doubt about
that's
it.
Right.
Huh?
Muhammad Ali was a bad man. Everybody knows that he was. So, and how he spoke up for his blackness and stuff. So it just kind of gave a young kid who moved out of this inner city to the suburbs who needed that kind of extra boost of confidence from a major celebrity figure, the confidence that I needed.
Yeah.
So that's why Muhammad Ali will always be one of my heroes to this day, and I was blessed enough to meet him. Not only did I meet him, he was messing with me. You know how he's notorious
for
messing with people and
joking
stuff.
Around.
So we go into we go to talk to Muhammad Ali. We go into the mess hall.
Yeah.
We were there for quite a while.
At his camp,
at Deer Lake Camp in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And we go into the mess hall to talk to him. It was myself, my father, my uncle, my father's business partner, Ed Russo, Donald Payne Jr., the current congressman, and maybe a few other people. And I was sitting at the end of the table. My back was to a telephone on the wall.
Yeah.
And everybody was sitting around the table talking to Muhammad Ali. And they come on, champ, and giving them reasons. And his people in his camp didn't want him to get involved in politics because what had happened previously, a few years previous, President Jimmy Carter tried to send Muhammad Ali, I think, to an African nation on kind of a semi-political trip, and these were heads of state, and they kind of rejected Muhammad Ali
because
he was an athlete, and they were like, "This, we respect you, but this is a serious political issue, and you have no expertise in this, so we're not going to meet with you." So Muhammad Ali caught some flack a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was leery about getting into politics. And also his camp didn't want him to take time out of his training, you know, to fight Leon Spinks. So what happened was mysteriously somebody had gone out of the room or Muhammad Ali got a phone call on the payphone behind me. And they said, "Champ, telephone." So he walks over, gets on the phone. Apparently these people were saying, you know, "Don't do this. We need you not to do this." But so he's on the phone and he gets off. And I have a picture. Too bad we can't put it up on the Ustream or something.
Yeah.
But I have a picture of him standing behind me on the phone, and I'm sitting at this table with my hand on my elbow.
You have that picture?
My elbow on the table. Yeah, I do. My elbow on the table, and my hand, you know, you have your hand on your chin in your hand, and you're leaning on a table. So all of a sudden, I hear like a little rustling or a little buzz near my ear, and I kind of look around. It sounded like a fly. I didn't pay any attention to it, and went back to just kind of sitting there listening to people talk. And they're waiting for Muhammad Ali to get off the phone. And then I hear it again. And I look around, and some guy comes over and says, "Yeah, there's a fly in here." And he waves a paper like he's trying to hit a fly. So Then I hear it a third time. And now I'm realizing, as I look around the room, I can see people are kind of chuckling a little
laughing.
Bit. And the guy comes over again. "Yeah, that fly, you know." And I realize something must be happening behind me. And I knew who was standing behind me was the champ. And I turned around, and I was going to give him one of those looks like, "Ali, I will beat up on you." But I didn't say anything to him. Come to find out, my thinking was, whatever he's doing, he's standing too far away from me. Because every time I turned around, you know, to see what was flying near me, Muhammad Ali was acting like he was on the phone, like nothing was going on.
Yeah.
And I said, he's too far away from me to really reach me and mess with me. Or so I thought. But come to find out, somebody took a picture. Sure enough, Muhammad Ali was reaching over and making this little noise with his hand next to my ear. And every time I turned around, he would turn around and act like he was on the phone, and everybody was laughing at me. I was the brunt of the joke. But I really realized how long his arms were, because one of the things about his boxing ability was his reach.
His reach, yeah.
And I remember that. And even just standing there watching him walk around, you could see how long his arms were. And Muhammad Ali was a big guy, 6'4".
Yeah. Wow.
He wasn't a little guy for a boxer. So will always remain one of my heroes, even though during the time of him and Joe Frazier, he did, you know, as time goes on, we found out certain things in the ways he treated Joe Frazier. It was a little bit extreme, calling Joe Frazier a gorilla.
What about the Thriller like in Manila?
Well,
who was that? That was
the
match?
The Gorilla. Come on, Gorilla, the Thriller in Manila. So it was a great fight. They almost, I mean, I've been to Manila, ironically, years later as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, you remember when I went. And
you were
it's
doing
hot.
Colin
it's
Powell
right,
at that particular point, yeah.
Film. Playing Colin Powell, General Powell, in a project. But the Philippines is very hot, humid. And if Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier fought, I think they fought in the middle, like 3 in the morning or something like that. So it could be closed circuited broadcast back here to the United States. So they were fought in the middle of the night. And I think the temperature was like 80 degrees. They had the stadium outside. And they said it was crazy.
Awful.
They were just it almost got made both of them very sick. So a shout out to Mr. Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's the greatest fighter ever.
Yes.
You know, we're waiting for calls. You know, we're going to be talking to today to Bill Katz, William Loren Katz. And we're going to be talking to him about, you know, I was reading a book about the revolutionary suicide, but revolutionary suicide by Huey Newton. I was trying to make a comparison between that and the article I was reading. And then I was also going to be talking to, you know, William Loren Katz about Huey Newton also, because he remembers that era. And he has that in his book. And Eyewitness, and I've left the book at home. I am at the last point, you know, left the book by William Loren Katz home.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also going to be talking about Black Indians and, you know, how these things are, everything fits in.
Right.
And he does a chronological development of African American history, very, very extensive.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that he will be calling in. Let me just give out the number for people to call in, 323-679-0906. We're waiting for not only Bill Katz to be calling, but Gina Scott might be calling in also. 323-679-0906. We may be having the same problem that we had last week, but we do have, you know, about 4 minutes to break. But also, you know, I'm going to be talking about this article that was in the Star Ledger a couple days ago on February 23rd. The name of the article is Angry White Men Are Creating an American Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm going to be talking about that when we come back. So, and that article is written by Travis Gosa, I think. And he asks, why are so many white men like Michael Dunn angry? And Dunn was the man who was found guilty a couple weekends ago on 3 counts of attempted second-degree murder for shooting into a car full of black teenagers, you know, in Jacksonville, Florida, after an argument over loud music. And he was not convicted of the murder of Jordan Davis,
mm-hmm.
which is what happened. Jordan Davis was a 17-year-old that was killed, you know, in an incident. It was very similar to the case of Trayvon Martin,
right.
his killer, George Zimmerman. So Dunn's case represents the rage felt by many angry white men in America. And so this article, really, I'm very glad that Travis Gosa in the Star Ledger,
right.
you know, wrote it, Angry White Men Are Creating an American Crisis.
Right.
So we're going to be talking about that. I'm going to make a comparison or, you know, try to put together something about why Huey Newton was so endeared to the community. He was, you know, the founder of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically, you know, there was a period of time when there were a whole lot of, you know, angry black men.
Mm-hmm.
But what Huey Newton did was he formed an organization, and they were helping the community. They were raising funds for children. They were providing education, you know, classes for children. They were, you know, they were dealing in shelters and food lines and all that sort of thing. So we're going to be talking about how that happened to come about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he was eventually killed, you know, because
Huey Newton now.
So,
okay.
But this article about angry white men are creating an American crisis, you better believe they're creating an American crisis, because it's going to come to a time when, you know, black men are going to be getting sick and tired of this.
Right, and that, is that the crux of the article? I mean, that's what we were talking about earlier. You might want to go into it at length so people could kind of follow it a little bit when you talk about it.
We have one more minute, and we're still waiting for
people. Well, they'll call in when they call in, and we'll get them. We don't need to announce, but I want to talk about it really quickly. And
why don't we go for the break first?
Okay, we're going to go to a break right now. We'll be back on the other side. Stay tuned to the Kay Thompson Live Show, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
views and opinions expressed on GoPro Radio Network shows are solely those of the speakers and are not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
GoPro Radio, the fastest growing network in the galaxy, is leaner and meaner with a new attitude, new technology, and a brand new lineup. Tune in and get wired every Wednesday, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern with the BCS Experience featuring Byron C. Saunders, formerly of New York City's WBAI. Then at 6 p.m., it's the Black Agenda TV Express featuring sought-out political commentator Glenn Ford, formerly of America's Black Forum. Then at 8 p.m., it's time for K. Thompson Live with the legendary radio host K. Thompson of Inner City Broadcasting's WLIB and her son, renowned actor Eric Payne, who starred in such films as Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Drop Squad, and many more. Then, at 9 p.m., it's Food Wrap, featuring Nina Markel, a.k.a. the unofficial mayor of Jersey City, and former Viacom marketing guru Shauna Glover. Last but not least, at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's The Sexy Party Show, with the bad boy of dating Mr. Locario of I Love New York fame and his partner in crime, Miles Cunningham. So get wired every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern only on the GoPro Radio Network, www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And welcome back to the K. Thompson Live Show. My name is Eric Payne, and you are K. Thompson?
I think.
I believe you are.
K. Thompson.
You look familiar.
Yeah.
And we are joined in the studio by Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Good evening, all.
How are you?
Finally made it through the snow.
Joining us from now on.
Yeah, thank you. Grateful. Yeah. Good to be heard.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, we were talking about the article that you just mentioned. You were talking about this
article
that came out
in the Star Ledger about angry white men who are creating an American crisis. The Dunn case,
right?
The Zimmerman case, you know, with the stand your ground.
Yeah.
And two young teenagers were killed.
I am still baffled by that.
Yeah.
10 shots in this one vehicle, one person dies.
Yeah.
And I mean, the jury did the right thing by convicting him, but you know, he should have gotten the maximum penalty. And you know, again, this whole issue of stand your ground. It may be germane to certain states, but I mean, I think there's an overall feeling throughout the country that stand your ground exists, no matter what state you're in. You know.
Yeah.
And
what do you mean?
Well, I mean the deal is all right. You don't see it so much in the East, and I don't know how many states numerically actually use this measure.
Actually, have it on the books.
You know, but it needs to be expunged at this point. And I think even though we've made some progress, we're still, light years behind, I mean, even with the first African-American president.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the progress that we've made, and then some of us in our own community should be held accountable for their actions and their activities, one of the things, as you mentioned this case, I was driving in here, and I had heard about the NFL is thinking, the owners of the all the football owners in the country are now considering a measure that they're going to impose a penalty every time they hear a player use the N-word while playing during a game.
Right.
And
I heard about that, too.
Yeah. It came down apparently yesterday. I just heard it on the way in here. And I just said to myself, I wonder how well they're going to enforce something like that when everyone is using it like it's just either a term of endearment or they use it in anger. And I even see why it's calling each other the N-word.
Progress.
Know?
We finally made it America.
Yeah.
We have finally...
Really?
Made it America,
okay.
When white people start calling each other the N-word,
yeah, you know,
doggone it.
Well, I tell you, I mean,
we have
reached
the promised land.
Yeah, we have, I guess, you know, but it baffles me.
Well, I think that's a good thing, actually. I think it's a good thing. I think we need to establish a new norm and a new standard. That word is...
A 15-yard penalty
that,
every time.
Well,
that
it should be. It should be. They
all
should
right.
start establishing that
yeah.
because that's what makes it okay. And once you start making people aware... You know, just, they say if you didn't know, you didn't know. Once you know, then you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they should start doing that. They should start making
I mean,
it.
Especially someone with your background, you know, what you've been exposed to out in Hollywood, in La La Land, if you will, and not to minimize, you know, the culture out there. But what are your thoughts about when you see one of us interacting with each other? And is it comfortable for people, you know, of our persuasion to be, you know, calling each other that? I mean, is that
what
still
are,
considered
What are my thoughts
or?
When I see other black people
right,
talking to each other
know.
Like that? I mean, just like all of us, we don't have any negative thoughts. I mean, it depends on who it's used in front of. I think that for me, and I don't think this is not indicative to Hollywood, certainly. I mean, you couched it in, you phrased the
right,
question
right.
in there,
but
it's
no,
not, it's certainly
say,
not
I mean,
indicative
you,
to Hollywood.
I'm talking about films and... You know, where it's constantly being thrown.
Oh, you're talking
at.
About in the context of movies
yeah,
and things
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah,
right.
no, I don't think it should be. I don't think it should be put in movies where it's made to be make people cool, made to be the cool thing to do, where people are calling each other that. Because what happens with our music and our culture is that everybody wants to be a part of it. Everybody
exactly.
wants to emulate it.
Right.
So when the hip hop guys calling each other, that's why you have white people figuring they probably are honestly confused. There probably are some white people that are honestly confused, and I
not
believe that they
new.
Are. And, but, you know, when they hear us calling it, and they say, don't call it that, where you guys are calling each other. But also, too, you know, I've heard that some Jewish people refer to each other, call each other Jew, and mess with each other. So every culture has that.
Yeah.
And so that's a legitimate question, but sometimes it's not. And perhaps, you know, we need to define our own self, and I think that's a good thing, that we need to start trying to stamp out, eradicate that word. And, you know, Jay-Z came up with Jigga, which is not the N-word, but it's Jigga. So I mean, you know, that was a replacement for that, clearly.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I think that certainly in the context of entertainment and things like
yeah.
that, I don't think it needs to be used. It's ironic that you brought up that question because I'm watching one of my favorite shows is this TV show, House of Cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Showtime
yeah.
starring
right.
Don Cheadle.
That. Yeah.
And there was a scene where we had Mekhi Phifer and Tip, the rapper, on. And there was a
uh-huh.
scene where they called each other the N-word. And I don't think, I mean, because they were kind of hustler guys who have made it good, street corner guys who have made it big. So it kind of worked in that kind of mentality because one said it to the other. But it didn't need to be in there.
Yeah,
I suppose it threw it in for a certain amount of authenticity.
Right.
But my feeling is it might have been written. I don't think that T.I. took the liberty to say that. Maybe so, maybe not. But that was an instance where it didn't necessarily need to be in there. And I think that if you have writers, black writers, that are a little bit more sensitive to that, they probably would be like, well, we don't need to put that in here at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know.
But it's still, I mean, the thing is, it still speaks to the whole issue of promoting a certain element of our culture that certainly the masses would like to feel, well, all right, well, if they say it's okay amongst themselves.
Well, that's already
well,
been done.
We,
that's
yeah,
already
yeah,
that's
yeah.
already been done. That's I mean, we're behind the eight ball on that. We're trying to
yeah.
trying to get
I,
the,
turn
get,
it
the
around,
get the
right.
car back in the barn,
yeah,
so to speak.
But
so.
I think the horse is gone. And,
right.
You know,
the horse
you know,
is, well, I don't think I think now that there's attention on that, like you said, the NFL, everybody's trying to do it, and that spanned out of having gay players in there. That spanned out of the Jonathan Martin Richie Incognito
right.
incident.
Exactly.
So now they're trying to be more correct, and I think it's good because those are the young guys playing in professional sports are the ones who establish the culture for all the people that are watching
mm-hmm.
the sports. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you one big example. When Michael Jordan shaved his head, because he was losing his hair. Uh-huh. What'd that do? That liberated everybody that was follicly challenged in the United States to shave their head.
I thought it was Al Roker. I didn't know.
You are really behind.
Yeah,
man.
I guess
you
so.
Are really behind. Al Roker.
Yeah, Al Roker. You know Al Roker.
Al Roker ain't creating those styles of trends, okay? Trust me.
A lot of weight.
Al Roker, I love him.
Yeah.
He's not creating those styles of trends.
Okay. Right.
Maybe Jolly Weatherman style.
Yeah.
He did create a style. Heavy black weatherman that was Jolly back in the day.
Mm.
Right.
But, no, Michael Jordan created the trend. Once he shaved his head and made it okay, everybody else,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Even white boys, even white dudes,
yeah, exactly.
Went ahead and watched. Well, you know, when you watch ESPN or watch the show now, you got the white dudes. They went baldy, too.
Uh-huh.
So Michael Jordan, that's what I'm talking about. The athletes, they create these trends, these styles that are reflective of more. They cross the border of just sports, but get to be culture. So that's why I say get these young guys to get out of their mindset of saying the N-word and hit them in their pocket at their job. And then hopefully it will become second nature and permeate throughout the rest of the culture, and we can eradicate that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Michael Jordan, because the thing is, when I think of him, I think of someone who has social graces that all of us wish we could embrace.
Gotcha.
I'm not saying that, you know, he's not as flippant. He doesn't. I've never seen a situation where he's been lost in terms of trying to communicate.
Uh-huh.
You know, he doesn't. I don't get the impression. I don't know him personally. I've never had a real personal conversation with the guy. I interviewed him once, maybe way back in the day. But the deal is that he doesn't strike me as the kind of person who will go to, you know, the GED level, if you will, in order to get his points across.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I don't mean to knock people who receive that, but, you know, from what I've learned in this lifetime, that you have the PhDs and the GEDs, and there are many of us who fall into the latter category, unfortunately, and not doing anything to elevate their conversation. And I just see when I juxtapose a Jordan with some of these modern-day ball players, they seem to lack the intellect, the social grace.
The class.
The class.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think with I'm sorry, go ahead, Mom.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
I think with Jordan, first off, he seemed like he actually worked and might have actually earned his degree, first off, because you could tell the ones who seemed like they went to class and paid attention first.
Yeah.
Secondly, too, it's a different time now, too.
Yeah.
Because Michael came into the league, you know, in his era, you know, you had to earn it. You had to earn the respect a little bit. Because you remember when he first came into the league, they weren't respecting him. They were trying to foul him hard and this and that. And he was the kid who scored 55 points or 60 while his team was losing.
Right, that's true.
You know, so you start to get a rep of being a selfish player, I think, then when you're scoring all these points, your team is losing. So, you know, nobody was really feeling him of that much like that. But I think that as time went on, you know, he earned it. So he realized that you needed to earn respect. And the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of these young guys now, they just come in and they think they're automatically owed it.
You can say the same thing about LeBron. You know, it wasn't until that he was teamed up.
Because
Jordan, what helped Jordan was Scottie Pippen.
Right.
No question
they
about
built
that.
The team around them.
And they had a good coach.
Right, exactly.
Who understood that it wasn't about monopolizing. Kobe Bryant, you know, quiet as a cap. Still has to learn that lesson, in my opinion. That's just me. You want to beat up on me because I said it, Kobe? So be it.
Right.
But, you know, but the deal is LeBron. I mean, they would not have won the last couple of championships had he not shared that ball with Wade and a few other people out there that made the team. Because it's all about team effort.
Yeah.
Right.
You
know? That's right.
What do you guys feel about Jason Kidd as a coach?
I find him interesting.
Yeah.
I really do. I never knew. I'm not saying because you play the game for so long that gives you the aptitude to coach, because it's two different things. I've learned a very hard lesson about teaching. You know, in the last couple, you know, there's some people who have it and have the patience for it, and I'm assuming
and
coaching and don't.
Right.
You know. And I'll readily admit, you know, I managed, and I know I had my fill after I handed in my resignation, you know, that's one area. Two careers that I will not go back to. Pushing a cab, I did that when I was in college. And I won't go back to teaching anytime, especially young children. Let's put it that way.
Really?
How dare you?
I thought they were easier than the older ones.
Well, you'd be surprised, you know, particularly the ones in the South Bronx. Let's put it that way,
oh, okay.
you know. And don't get me started on that, because that's another hour-long show. But and Kay, I mean, I know that you've been through that. And I applaud, I think, teachers, especially the seasoned ones.
We're God.
Yeah, really.
And goddesses.
You know, and I bow to that.
We put up with a whole lot.
You know, because I've heard also that OG and this, that, and the other, and his hair is wide, and his this, that, fat, you know, can't play ball. Until you take them out in the court and play ball with them and have a heart attack, you know, right away you get accepted.
trying to
you
prove
know,
something, huh?
Right, you know.
But, I mean, the teachers are really the heroes of our country.
Of course we are.
I think
they don't
so.
Get paid.
Teachers leaving, going to the media.
So we
can really have some fun, right? It's about time for a break.
We have a caller.
And we
caller.
Do have a caller.
Hold on, caller. We're going to get to you on the other side of the break.
Yes.
We got
stay with us.
Kind of sidetracked.
We'll get
going to a break.
Right. We're going to a break right now. Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back.
On the Kay Thompson Live Show.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have a product or service, a talent or something important to say, now's your chance to have your own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We'll help you to grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 today or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your own radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we are back. Kay Thompson Live here with...
My name is Eric Payne.
And I'm Wayne Gilman.
Boy, listen to those deep voices. And we have this good conversation about sports and whatnot. But anyway...
But we have a caller. Caller, yes. You've been on hold all the time. Who are you, caller?
Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Is the caller there? We're trying to see people.
Hold time.
In the
There's no hold time.
Room.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, maybe we lost the caller. But so we were talking about the sports. But you initially started off by talking about this article about the angry
white men creating an American crisis, and that was due to the strand. No,
okay.
They're on, but
well,
they're just
caller,
not saying anything.
Oh, maybe you're just listening in, caller. Maybe you can't get
that's
through.
Okay.
But. If you can, when you can get through, just chime in so we know you're there if you want to say something. But you're, to finish off about the article that you mentioned earlier.
This is
Mom.
About the Stand Your Ground case, and it's about the Dunn who, was in, Florida, who killed, the kid in the car, and blasted them, shot up the car because he said that Jordan taunted him with racial and gender slurs like cracker and bitch and, that kind of thing. And he was also said that he was pushed over the edge by insults and with my window rattling music, and he said that they said in this article that he said, you're not going to talk to me that way, and he grabbed his gun from his glove compartment, et cetera, et cetera. But I was reacting to the title of this article, Angry White Men Are Creating an American Crisis. Well, if angry white men are creating that kind of crisis because of the fact that they're hiding behind the Standing Their Ground law, then they can also expect that something else is going to they're going to get a reaction from this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And as I was telling Eric, earlier, I was reading this book, Revolutionary Suicide by, Huey Newton.
Right.
And it's about these angry black guys who formed an organization to help the community.
Right, right.
And still, they were, chased him down and they were doing things for the community.
40 years ago.
Yes, but this kind of thing, angry white men responding to a Stand Your Ground law, there's going to be an eventual,
response.
So for the purpose of people listening, the gist of the article is saying what? That angry white men...
are creating an American crisis because they are feeding racism.
Because...
with the Stand Your Ground, in other words, they will shoot you know, for some minor thing because they don't like black kids, they don't like rap music, they don't like this, and they think they have the right to, you know, shoot people.
So a lot more white guys are angry now.
Go ahead. And they're justifying it by calling any kind of a reaction.
They're using the stand your ground law as a justification these aggressive acts, many times obviously resulting in murder against young black males. And I've heard of this mentioned before, the notion of the angry white guy feeling because basically the changing demographic of the United States.
Exactly.
As well as that's pretty much it, changing also of traditional values that they had, you know.
Right.
The things with gay rights and things like that being passed, and gay marriage, same-sex marriage being passed. It's a changing environment, and that was a topic I've seen on some of the news channels.
Yeah.
So I guess that's along those lines of what the article
said. Yeah, because the stand your ground law, you know, justifies in their heads.
Right, they came up with that law to justify.
Justifies killing.
But you're saying that the reaction, the racism, the reaction that could be caused.
It's going to be a counter-reaction.
It's a counter-reaction to that, where blacks decide to take up arms or do whatever is necessary.
And basically that was the same thing that happened during, Huey Newton.
Right, but it's a different time.
Yeah, it's a different time, but it's very similar circumstances.
Well, what's different, we have a black president now, we didn't have a black president then. The reason they weren't angry then, they were just prejudiced with impunity.
Yeah.
Right.
So now they're angry because they can't have it back in those old days. Caller, are you on the line? I heard you moving around. I don't know if you want to take a part in the phone call, but anyway. They are angry. I don't know why they should be, but because they still treat the president like he's the new black guy on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And just some of the things that are said, you know, in the House of Representatives and around. You know, you got a state legislature, Arizona I'm talking about, that's considering making it legal for people to discriminate people based on their sexuality.
She just held a news conference,
Governor. Did she make a decision?
She vetoed it.
She came to her senses.
As everybody
really?
Knew.
I mean, just happened within the last 30 minutes.
She didn't come to her senses.
You're right. She was probably under a lot of pressure to say
reality
that. Because there were a lot of Republicans
mouth, you mean,
who
right.
felt, you know, what are you trying to do here? And she realized, she justified it and felt that it could probably lead to more problems, you know. But you're absolutely right. This lady who's the head of state in Arizona is not
Governor
worthy of
Brewer.
Respect because of what she's gone through with Obama himself.
Right.
Yeah, shaking your finger right at him.
But you know what? I am. It's ironic about that instance because just today I was watching MSNBC news program or whatever, and they were talking about that. And they were talking about her, and they were showing file pictures of Governor Brewer. One was of the finger
shaking
thing.
Yeah.
But there was another of a picture. Now, I'm assuming she was looking at the president. But it was the same. It was at the same around the same time. And it looked like she was looking at the president. And it looked like the expression on her face, like she was happy to see him. So maybe she wasn't looking at the president. But it was just ironic that what if that was the moment before where she saw the president getting off of Air Force when it was like, hey, how you doing?
Right.
And they snapped that picture.
Yeah.
And then when he got closer to her, they started talking, and she said, I want to say something to you. And then she started doing the finger thing.
Yeah.
Which became the story.
Right. Exactly.
Now, I'm wondering if
that could have been the case.
Because it looked like in this other picture, like she was reacting like somebody who was a supporter of the president.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing? Had her arms open. So I don't know if the president wasn't in the shot. That's the thing I'm remembering now. She might have been looking at somebody else.
But they did get the shot with her finger pointing him
right in his face.
I think she was grateful for the attention that, you know, any president, black, white, and different, didn't make, you know, just coming to her presence because she's the head of state there.
Yeah, but the way they've been acting.
They did this past weekend, the governor's conference in Washington, D.C.
Right.
The Republican governors came out.
Until Bobby Jindal started speaking.
Exactly.
And he didn't make sense.
Does he ever make sense?
Here's
a guy who wants to be president because another person of color was elected.
But here's the thing.
But doesn't connect.
I'm glad we started talking about Mr. Jindal because I've always thought about Bobby Jindal. Here's my thing about Bobby Jindal. First, I didn't know he was of East Indian descent, as is Nikki Haley, who was the governor of South Carolina. Mm. But here's what I find interesting. if you don't see him, and I can imagine what his campaign was like in certain parts of down there in Louisiana, because he's governor of Louisiana.
Right, right.
We're talking Huey Long and all his other Louisiana.
Right.
That he got an East Indian dude that's governor. What I probably believe is that when they were when old Bobby was running, they probably didn't put up any pictures of Bobby on the on the poster. They're Bobby Jindal, because it sounds like it's a Southern name. Bobby Jindal, like all American name, and you hear him talk. And I heard him talk before I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got that twang there, and he's talking, and he's got that twang, that down south thing, boom, boom. They put the camera on him, and it's the East Indian brother. I'm like, whoa.
Uh-huh. And
you
expect about his roots.
You expect to hear, you know, that, and I know that some of those rednecks out there in the sticks in Louisiana are expecting to see him in the 7-Eleven with an accent, or running the 7-Eleven, because you know, a lot of people of that part of the world seem to run convenience stores.
Right.
At least that's what some people think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny to me that he sounds like what they want him to be, like you would expect a Southern governor to sound. He's saying the things, but then when you see the picture of him, it's like, no, bro, they're never going to accept you. You're not going to be president. No matter how much and how far you go to try and assimilate, there's always going to be, I believe, in America, that line that is drawn. And that particular party, that Republican Party, will ask you to give up your ethnicity. They won't ask you to accept it, you know.
Which to me is a blatant form of disrespect.
It's a blatant form of disrespect. You can't come with your wholeness, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that when I think about that, it makes me think about when a lot of people, a lot of young black kids, they ride through areas with the music loud, boom, because you will accept me in my fullness.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid in Maplewood, and running into Caucasians that might have been racist or prejudiced at the time, they would talk about the stereotypes. Where's your radio? Where's your, you know, they always focus on stereotypical images of black people that have been perpetuated, so they expect you to act that way, to speak in a certain way,
right,
or act a certain way, and then when you don't, it's surprising to them. And so as a result, what happens to me, and probably to a lot of other people of color, not just black children, we try to assimilate. So we try to drop out those things that make us sound like we're that stereotypical black person. I'm not talking about uses of grammar and things like that, but I'm just talking about a way of talking. So we try not to embrace those things. And then I've noticed with me, I even felt embarrassed sometimes if I was on a field trip, if I was with those white classmates or friends of mine, and I would see another black person who fit more easily in that stereotype, I would feel embarrassed. When I became about 27 or something like that and started working with Spike Lee, I'll never forget being in Atlanta shooting School Days, hearing Public Enemy's first record, and the music was loud and it was aggressive and it jumped on you.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I realized, I started loving that music, because here are the hip-hop kids coming, and they're saying, this is our music, we're playing it loud and aggressive, and you better like us, and you will accept us on our terms. And the fullness of us.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I see that loud music playing and the kids are bumping, it gets a little annoying at times, I'll admit it. But to accept the full blackness.
Uh-huh.
Right.
If you're going to accept watered-down blackness like Tim Scott or Clarence Thomas, accept the full blackness like Flavor Flav and whoever else.
That's
and
extreme.
It's two very extremes of the spectrum.
That's okay.
But what I'm saying is that no race, no group should feel that they shouldn't be able to live to their fullness.
Exactly.
If some of us choose to be the stereotype, and I wonder about gay people. There's a gay person, and I have gay friends. How do you feel about some? Let's talk about men, gay men. Some that are particularly more flamboyant than others.
Mm. Right.
Some that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the gay men that might not be as flamboyant as the other gay men, do they feel embarrassed? And I think that probably why some of these gay individuals are so extreme is because they want you to accept them in their fullness.
You know, I never looked at it that. That
yeah.
is a very
right.
You know, accept who they
you're
are
right.
fully. So
yeah.
they go, so they go to the extreme.
Yeah.
You go to the extreme because they know how uncomfortable it makes someone just
exactly.
have to mention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I used to work with an individual dressed up like a woman, and I've seen individuals, you know, my mother owned the dance studio, guys dressed up like women. It's the craziest looking thing in the world to me.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not to them.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a guy who wanted to call himself a woman's name, very dainty name, you know, they always pick very dainty names. And I just couldn't call him that. And this guy was dressed up, he's having the whole transformation thing. and I really didn't have much to say to him, but I would fight for his right to be who he wants to be. Because I don't want any individual on this earth to experience being oppressed or being ostracized or being felt
because of who they are
outside of the group. Because if we've all felt it as people of color in this society, if you ever felt that, you don't want anybody to experience that.
Yeah.
And if you do want somebody else to experience that, then you're who you are.
Yeah. That's admirable, but it's a tough challenge in this society that we're in. I mean, throughout the world. I mean,
it's revenge. That's in the first testament. An eye for an eye. You want to exact your pound of flesh.
I think that's why this article, you know, struck me so much, because I wanted the same thing to happen to them to experience it. You know, meaning these guys who are, you know.
I want to continue. It's time for us to go to break. We'll continue this on the other side. Stay with us on the Kate Thompson Live Show. We'll be right back.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.GoProRadio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
The views and opinions expressed on GoPro Radio Network shows are solely those of the speakers and are not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Welcome back to the Kate Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne. That's my mom over there.
Yeah, right over here, Kate Thompson.
And we have the other legend in the studio.
That word legend's equated with age.
Well,
just call me homie.
No, not with age. Not with age, Mr. Gilman. Not with age at all. We know who you are.
Listen.
I'm going to shout your praises and give you your props because you deserve them. And you have been legendary. Let me just say this, in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, y'all know Wayne Gilman, and he's been around for a very long time, but he's been a staple in black radio and news. So
he's former news
director. Give you your props.
Right.
Because you don't give yourself your props.
How much do I owe you now?
You know, we'll talk about that later.
You owe me because I'm
you're passing
me first.
I die inside when he calls you Ma.
I know. We won't talk about age, but we both know about WLIB.
Okay, right.
Wayne Gilman, as everybody probably knows who is listening, if you were listening to WLIB, BLS, you know, years ago, you know, was a former news director there.
Right.
You know, it taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we had good fun.
Yes, we did.
We covered so many different, you know, stories. You know, I used to stay in a state of anger when I was on WLIB, by the way.
Because I was introduced to a lot of negative stuff coming from
the police department,
coming
from all these different, you know, cases where blacks and Latinos were being mistreated, killed, et cetera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know
what troubles
me?
Made
me angry. But I grew from it.
I understand, and not to cut you off, but the history of WLIB and what people like yourself and Gary and Mark and everyone else created, all that's lost now because the signal has gotten. I mean, I guess it was a corporate decision to go into a different direction in terms of promoting gospel music, but there's a whole demographic out there now that just knows WLIB as a music station. as I was coming up, LIB was an R&B station.
Mm.
You know, as a kid,
that was
used
a
to
long
time ago. Eddie O'J, you know, God rest him, and
when
Al
I,
Jackson
listen,
and Frankie Crocker.
When I started, it was talk. Judy Simmons was on.
Oh,
and then Diane Thompson.
That's when you first.
And Diane was not. Yeah,
you didn't know about WLIB.
I never heard of it. I never heard of it.
And you lived in the New York area. I know you grew up in New
Well, I was listening to, you know, WNJR. Franklin. Yeah, not really, because it's such a small station. But anyway, Glenn Grant was on there, Bill Franklin. And
Bill Franklin.
That was during the time of the seven missing boys, you know, down
right.
Was it Mississippi or, you know?
Yeah,
it wasn't Mississippi.
There were kids right in this area that would... that were
yeah, you're talking about the five missing boys.
Right, exactly.
That was my
case. I know, exactly.
You know, when that was John Monty, when he came in, we brought him in from, California, from Florida.
Right.
Andy Cooper paved his way to come here.
Yeah.
And what an experience. There was awful. Deli Challenge and what's her name?
You're thinking of, and she's now on internet radio.
Yeah, what is
Eutrice
Lee.
Lee.
Yeah, I'd love to get in touch with her.
Right. Yeah. Alton Maddox has a,
we've got to get in touch with Alton because, we had a goof up here.
And I saw the Reverend Al Sharpton last night.
He will not
TV.
Talk to me, by the way. I'm telling it right now.
Really?
I have called his office several times now.
He's busy. Perhaps he's busy. So
yeah, he's
will
busy.
Not talk
he's
to
ignoring
you.
Me. He Listen,
no,
we
sure.
go back many, many years.
And
okay?
I know there was a time Al would not ignore you.
Al was and is a good friend.
Yeah,
I want to talk to him about his book.
Right.
And that is all what's
him,
in the
though.
Book is what I want to talk to him about.
Physically, he doesn't seem to have the same stature.
No,
he's very
skinny.
Yeah, and for some reason that just troubles me because to me...
Maybe, but he has a darn good show.
I hope he's healthy, yeah.
He's got a darn good show, and he's really putting it out there. So I'm really glad that he is on MSNBC. You know, listen to him all the time.
Exactly.
And Melissa Perry Scott and a few others.
And
you know.
Joy Reid. They gave
Joy Reid,
the
fantastic.
Sister, gave her her own hour at 2 o'clock. So I'm really happy for her because I've been watching MSNBC for a while. And I just remember her coming on as a commentator, and as time went on, you could tell that they're putting people into rotation a little heavier and heavier.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I know once they threw Martin Brashear under the bus, I kind of knew that I was hoping that they would work something out for her because you could tell when they're trying to groom certain people, it looks like. And so I'm really happy for her because, you know,
well, there's a whole
you don't
lot of
see a lot of
super
black
bright,
women that look like her on
yeah,
TV.
There are a whole lot of super bright women on MSNBC, and that I like and that I watch.
Right.
What about the controversy with Alec Baldwin, I understand? Because I don't get a chance to watch, but I heard that he was, there was an article in the Post, not to say the best paper.
He was tired of being, blasted by the... paparazzi.
Well, yeah, that's one thing. But he had an opportunity to be on MSNBC,
and
he went after my good friend Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, Rachel, good person
accusing
also.
Her of having put the kibosh on his ability to get a show there.
But I do have to mention somebody else on the Atlanta wife, Nene.
Oh.
Or Nene.
Oh, yeah.
And
we're going to jump to a different area now.
Yeah, listen,
just
because
took a quick,
I enjoy
a hard left right there.
It's a hard left, yeah, but I enjoy this. It's really funny. But the point is, she is the top rated, I understand, the best paid.
Highest paid.
Housewife
on television.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Talk about Nene Leakes of the Atlanta Housewives.
What's the attraction in your estimation?
Car wreck mentality. Well, really, I mean, with the reality shows, it's a car wreck mentality. I mean, because the people who shine the most in a lot of these shows are the people who act out, who act the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be the ones that get the most attention.
Yeah. He's making a lot of money.
And it's a shame, really, that... That happens. I mean, some of these.
But
folks,
some people do enjoy it, and I enjoy it. I don't watch it all
those
the time.
Real
but,
life
you
soap
know.
Operas.
Yeah, but and there's a lot of reality shows. There's To Have and To Have Not, you know, by Tyler Perry, which is an excellent show, which
that's
is really
I don't think that's a reality
House of Cards.
Show.
Oh, yes, it is. No. It's a reality show, meaning that it's on all the time, and it doesn't have the same quality of comedy.
Right.
Of course,
those are scripted shows. Reality is a difference. Those are shows that are produced and scripted.
Yeah, okay.
The Have and Have Nots is a fictional show.
Yeah, and so,
And the reality, alleged reality TV is something That's yeah. That's not scripted. So we're at the end of the show.
Already?
Yeah, 1 minute to end. Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
And thanks for calling in. I mean, thanks for calling in. Yeah. Yeah, good time talking on the Kay Thompson Live Show. You better stop turning that music up while I'm talking.
I'm Kay Thompson.
I'm Eric Payne.
And
Wayne Gilman.
Our new edition.
Kay Thompson Live Show. Listen to us next week.
Every week, everyone.
We got more stuff for you. Never mind.
Got that.
Thanks for listening on the GoPro Radio Network. Peace. Now you can turn the music up. Girl.